Welcome to the Thomistic Institute podcast. Our mission is to promote the Catholic intellectual tradition in the university, the church, and the wider public square. The lectures on this podcast are organized by university students at Thomistic Institute chapters around the world. To learn more and to attend these events, visit us at ThomisticInstitute.org.
Friendship is a difficult good. For St. Thomas, all human actions aim at some perceived good. These goods are hierarchically ordered. Lower goods are material or physical goods that fulfill basic human needs, like food, shelter, or even wealth. Higher goods are spiritual, intellectual, and moral goods that lead to the ultimate purpose of human life. Friendship, I'd like to argue, is one of the highest goods, but it is also a difficult good to achieve and to sustain. You might find that agrees with your experience. One of the most beautiful treatises on friendship ever written was composed by the Roman statesman Marcus Tullius Cicero, who wrote his De Amicitia on friendship in the year 44 BC, nearly half a century before the birth of Jesus Christ. Cicero is not short for words on the subject of friendship. He says, "It is the noblest and most delightful of all the gifts the gods have given to mankind," he says. Cicero claims that friendship is what makes life worth living. Full stop. We need friendship all the time, Cicero says, just as much as we need the proverbial prime necessities of life. I'm not speaking of ordinary, commonplace friendship, he says, delightful and valuable though they can be. What I have in mind instead is the authentic, truly admirable sort of relationship, the sort that was embodied in those rare pairs of famous friends. Nothing else in the world, he goes on, is so completely in harmony with nature, and nothing so utterly right in prosperity and adversity alike. Friendship, though, is only possible between good men. It may be defined as a complete identity of feeling about things in heaven and earth, an identity which is strengthened by mutual goodwill and affection. But the single exception of wisdom, he says, I'm inclined to regard it as the greatest of all the gifts the gods have bestowed on mankind. It is the most satisfying experience in the world, Cicero says, to have someone you can speak to as freely as your own self about any and every subject on earth. Friendship both adds to a brighter glow to prosperity and relieves adversity, Cicero says, by dividing and sharing the burden. If we take Cicero at his word, and if friendship is raised by Christ to establishing a friendship between man and God by grace, its height and goodness is unsurpassed. Friendship is what makes life worth living. I encourage you to read Cicero's De Amicitia on friendship, if you haven't already. It lifts your mind to heights in the great goodness of friendship. As Aristotle says, a friend is a second self. In this sense, a good friend is a remedy to loneliness, isolation, and fear. Perfect love casts out fear, as the scriptures tell us. But we might also read Cicero with great sadness. How easy it is for us to read of the glory and goodness of the profound and joyful sharing which is between the best of friends, and for us to put down Cicero's text sad. Would that we had a good friend, as Cicero describes, and despair enters our soul. We realize we may have no friends, or too few friends, or we can't envision that a future good is possible to even attain, such as friendship is this. It is true, friendship is a great good, and it's sometimes difficult to attain. So how do we not fall to despair at a lack of friends? For that, the divine virtue of hope has something to teach us. Let's first talk about hope as an irascible passion, a sensible response to a good that is difficult but possible to attain with the help of God. The passionate element of hope is precisely what will drive you towards the good that you want. This passion is formed into virtue by reason. Reason acting on our passion, forming it, not suppressing it. The act of hope actually attains God as a virtue, right? A future good, which is difficult or arduous by very definition, but possible to attain. If faith deals with God as true, hope deals with God firstly as good, and secondly as a good helper. The very act of leaning on and relying on God attains God as a present helper. As one might say, hope is in the hoping. It's in the activity of the verb itself. In the act of hope, we are present to God, and God, by grace, is present to us. It's true that we are tempted to settle for things we can see with human eyes. Hope stretches us to long for an invisible good that we cannot see. Friendship is an invisible good in a way. Common goods are abstract by certain sense of them. And that is difficult by the very nature of hope. Hope and charity are in the will. They relate to God as divine goodness. Here's one translation: when you hear it's in the will, say instead, it's going to require me to do something. Work. Aquinas says that one of the qualities of hope is the ability and the willingness to be surprised by God. Hope wells up in our soul. Cynicism and pessimism wane, and God surprises us with the spark of hope. That is what we hope for. We need hope. Worldly or servile fear drags down our will and our mind, and is an enemy of hope. Friendship is hard and good because it is a common good. What does this mean? Common goods can present to our minds as abstract. It's like imagining a good family when you don't have one, or imagining a good friend when you've never had one. Cicero helps to strike our imagination, and his concrete words on the nature of friendship help us to see what it is and what it must be. But that is daunting, you say. It's not easy to climb the heights. Common goods are higher goods, and we need some practice in recognizing and longing for common goods. Common good, according to St. Augustine, a true common good is one that is not lessened when shared. The good is not lessened, but rather enhanced, enlarged, and intensified when shared. Truth is a common good. Friendship is a common good. When you share a meal with a friend, the food diminishes. Food's not a common good, but the friendship grows. Common goods, in fact, are the very essence of community. Don't give too much of a downcast thought on whether you're good or not, you yourself. St. Thomas teaches that it is inasmuch as we exist, we are good. So on a bad day, rely on that. I know many of us don't think or feel that way at times. We need to hear God say it to us in Christ, that he loves us, that he calls us friends, that he created us good, and that he sustains us in being. That's the regular activity of friendship, daily, minute by minute, hour by hour of every day of our lives. It is God who makes us good by his love, by sharing his goodness. He's a good friend. It is Aristotle who says the common good is greater and more divine than the private good. We are made for common goods by nature. like friendship, and we delight in them. Remember what we just said. Common goods are more delightful than the private good. That makes us want to long for them. As Charles de Coninck says, the common good differs from the singular good by reasons of its very universality. It carries the notes of superabundance and is eminently diffusive of itself, in that it is more communicable. The common good, he continues, extends itself more to the individual than it does to the singular good. It is the better good of the individual. We mentioned the theological virtue of hope and noted that hope is also a passion. It's a passion that pertains to the irascible appetite. If friendship is a difficult good, hope, that means we need to face the great good with a more perfect desire. Any number of things, personalities, circumstances, emotion, personal difficulties, can challenge the durability of any friendship. Our response to difficulty, according to Aquinas, is, in part, driven by our need to qualify our passions. Contentious emotions of the irascible power, where the passion of hope resides, means that good and evil are received with arduousness and difficulty. And in this case, it falls to the virtue of fortitude or courage to order those emotions to a good and virtuous end and means. Fortitude, as St. Thomas teaches, is the virtuous qualification of the irascible appetites. We can be tempted by the concupiscible appetite in needful, chaste friendships, but let's leave that aside for now. Friendship calls for the virtue of temperance. In addition to the passion of hope, there is one other contentious emotions, among others, that Aquinas lists, which will help us to seek and strive for a difficult good, and that is daring. In fact, the virtue of fortitude is the mean between fear and daring, curbing fear and moderating daring. Some of us have too much fear. Some of us has too much daring. And so each of us has to find the virtuous mean between the extremes. Aquinas is not squeamish. Daring is an important part of the virtue, but the chief act of fortitude is, wait for it, endurance. That's why it's so difficult. Life, friendship require endurance. Fortitude helps us to endure, and the great good of friendship sometimes takes endurance. Dare for a great good with a virtuous mean, Aquinas would tell you. And he is clear when he says in the Summa Theologiae, because fortitude uses daring more than it suppresses it, so that excess daring is more like fortitude than lack of daring is. So the mean between the extreme of fear and daring for Aquinas is much closer to daring than it is to fear. Sadness and sorrow at great goods inhibit us, as we've heard it said so clearly by Professor Hibbs this afternoon. As St. Thomas says, sloth is an oppressive sorrow, which to wit so weighs upon man's mind that he wants to do nothing. Thus acid things are also cold, hence sloth implies a certain weariness of work. Sloth is a sluggishness of the mind, which neglects to begin good. Remember when I promised you that it would require work. Sloth hates work. Does that sound to you like at least a Monday morning at the very least? But there's good news from Aquinas. The more we think about spiritual goods, the more pleasing they become to us. So the more we think about spiritual goods, the more pleasing they become to us, and forthwith as he says, sloth dies away. He says, sloth seeks undue rest insofar as it spurns the divine good. It's kind of like idleness or drowsiness. Here are the things that Aquinas lists as the ill effects of sloth. The wandering of the mind, without rhyme or reason, he calls the uneasiness of the mind. Or the wandering of the mind pertaining to the imaginative power, which he calls curiosity. Like when you curiously and in a wandering fashion surf the internet. Curiosity is the opposite of studiousness, which we spoke about this morning. Sloth affects our speech as well, St. Thomas says, with loquaciousness, talking too much, and with restlessness of the body. Aquinas says, a person shows unsteadiness of his mind by the inordinate movements of the members of his body. How often does that speak the truth of us? Sloth leaves us in an aimless, unstable place. Well, if you need to have someone paint you a picture of sloth, its effects and remedies, look to no other than Dante in the Divine Comedy. He treats sloth in the 17th and 18th canto of the Purgatory. For Dante, aligned with St. Thomas, sloth is not laziness. Sloth, as Dante describes it, is slow love, a lukewarmness of love. Anthony Esselin reminds us of the essential Christian truth, lest we fall into the torpor of lukewarmness, when he says, love is the law of all things. It is the law of God because it is his very being, and it is the law of all creatures because they were made by God. As Dante writes in Canto 17, ne creatur mai fu sansa more tu lo sai. Not the creator nor a single creature, as you know, ever existed without love. The soul's love, or the love that comes by nature. If the soul's love strays, Dante says, if it desires what's wrong or loves with too much strength or not enough, hence you understand how love must be the seedbed where all virtuous deeds must grow. But truth be told, we are slow to love. We're drowsy creatures. We sometimes prefer our unrealized dreams, which live in our drowsiness, that middle position between half awake and half asleep. How many of us live half awake, half asleep? As Dante says, if you're about to drowse and fall to dreams, when at once all my sleep was snatched from me by people coming at us from behind. So that's how they're sort of bothered. People are rushing at them from behind, startling them. Remember the surprise of hope we talked about. In purgatory, the drowsy are startled, shaken awake, startled by people rushing at them from behind. St. Thomas says that one of the characteristics of divine hope is to be surprised by God. Hope is a remedy for sloth. But the sure hope of the souls in purgatory requires human effort. Hope works on the human will. You've got to work from falling drowsy. And that's what Dante has them doing. Quote, here they restore a love of good that fell short of its duty. Here they ply the oar, which they once rowed too slowly, to their loss. End quote. He goes on, come on, come on, don't let time slip away for lukewarm love. Zeal and well-doing makes grace green again. You folk in whom the fiery sting of love, makes up for your omission, and delaying when perhaps you were tepid in good works. So how are we made for great goods, like the greatness and loveliness of friendship, according to St. Thomas? The answer in a word, which encapsulates all the virtues, is magnanimity. We need magnanimity. Greatness of soul is what needs to grow in our soul. St. Thomas says clearly on his commentary on Aristotle's Ethics, what is great in any virtue seems to pertain to magnanimity. The magnanimous man or woman thinks himself worthy of great things that do not exceed his capacity. As a young man or woman, how do you know or discover what you're capable of? We'll talk about that, but suffice for now, you have to dream big. The risk is pride. This is why good and proper self-love and self-knowledge are so essential, to keep you falling to the extremes, which are tempting. Don't worry, humility and magnanimity go hand in hand for St. Thomas. Yes, there is a virtuous mean to magnanimity, between the excess and defect. Set it one way, between hope and despair, both responses to an arduous good, hope or despair. St. Thomas says he is called magnanimous because he possesses a great spirit or drive. It's not the accomplishing of greatness that makes you magnanimous, according to St. Thomas. It's the kind of greatness of spirit or drive. The virtuous living presupposes that you are made for greatness. God created you this way, guaranteed. As Joseph Pieper says, a person is magnanimous if he has the courage to seek what is great and becomes worthy of it. Well, all that seems easy and dreamy, but how easy is it? It's difficult. Here's the good and the bad news. Performing great deeds is not so easy. In fact, it comes with some great difficulty. It's not easy to have a regular and constant habit of excellence, a regular and constant desire for greatness. Magnanimity in this respect perfects our passions or appetites for great virtue amidst the difficulty. It helps to motivate and animates our activity, especially when we're faced with difficulty in the mere face of it, and when we're stretched beyond the normal limits. For this reason, St. Thomas places magnanimity under the virtue of fortitude. Yes, it takes courage or fortitude to do something great. Thomas also says magnanimity is immediately about the passion of hope. Love and hope are essential. Magnanimity is found in the irascible power. And the seeds of passion come with receiving that difficulty. But let's continue on the theme of you have to work. You have to strive for great goods. And the fact that higher goods take some greater effort, some greater grace, and friendship is one of those great goods, the greatest, maybe. For God so loves the world that he gave his only Son, so that everyone who believes in him may not perish, but may have eternal life, as St. John tells us. Living life requires virtue, which takes work for you and for me, and grace. Friendship is not just a fleeting occurrence, it in fact is a habit. What is it to say that friendship is a habit or habitus? Aquinas uses the term habit, habitus in Latin, in a bit of a different way than the way we use it regularly in the English language. Habitus is the middle position between potency and act. In other words, the middle position between radical and serious and life-giving capacity for action, and full actuality, actually doing something. So habitus is kind of that middle position. So if you're anxious in that middle space between desire for greatness and having it, work on and pray for, an increase in the habit, habitus, trust in the growth in virtue itself. The need for good habit or habitus reflects the fact that without the increased growth and excellence of virtue, purposeful activity is by nature difficult and burdensome. For some of you, it's difficult to get out of the bed in the morning. That's the truth. Friends tell one another the truth, and here's the truth. If we stay in the state of lethargy, we remain underdeveloped, and human potential as God created you to be becomes unrealized. Work. A virtuous habitus is a state of self-possession and self-realization, a kind of proper self-love, I would say, a kind of interior having what you desire to be. It shows us how grace and human activity really transform our human nature. Here's the good and the bad news. It comes with complete freedom. It's Yves Simon who helps to clarify Thomas's definition of virtue as an existential readiness. Are you? Yves Simon goes on to say, virtue is a kind of dependability or reliability. Most of us are relatively dependable, relatively. If we get out of bed in the morning, what marks the virtuous person, and I would say the good friend, is that he or she is dependable and reliable in the most difficult of circumstances. That is the very mark of the virtuous person for Aquinas, and as Simone shows. Here's some good helpful hints from the bestseller Emotional Intelligence 2.0. To be a good friend, be open and be honest. Enhance your natural communication style. Avoid giving mixed signals. Take feedback well. Build trust. Okay, they go on. Aquinas is helpful in many ways. Charity, he says, is to will the good of the other. Here's the kicker. To will the good of the other, you have to consider the other. Willing the other's good requires considering his or her good. So how do you get virtue if you don't have it? What spurs your striving after higher goods like friendship? Well, in a word, and in St. Thomas's worldview, it's passion, appetite, really. The powers of the soul of the human being, the will and the intellect, seek an object. The will, Thomas teaches, rests and delights in the good. The object of the will is the good in things and the good itself. That other power of human beings, the intellect, Thomas teaches, rests and delights in the truth. The object of the intellect is the truth. And the truth is the conformity of the intellect, or the mind, if you will, with reality. The truth is the good of the intellect, for an intellect is said to be good because it knows the true, as St. Thomas says. While the will desires to possess the good, the intellect desires to know the truth. And this desire, ordered to a certain fulfillment, is also ordered to our happiness. So what is this desire? Aquinas speaks of it in various ways. Appetite, yes, a kind of hunger, desire, longing, pursuit, is nothing other than an inclination towards something that is both similar and suited to that which desires it, Aquinas says. Appetite directs a creature to its proper end, its telos. So for anyone who's unfamiliar with Aquinas, notice that it is not the law that commands in this case, but reality itself, and the hunger for fulfillment, desire itself, that draws us forward in a reliable way within the order of creation to our own fulfillment and happiness by virtue. Appetite, for St. Thomas Aquinas, finds its metaphysical grounding in the convertibility of being and goodness. Goodness adds to being the aspect of desirability. that which evokes appetite. Appetite, then, explains why creation is dynamic and not stagnant. Because of appetite for the good, the creature moves towards the being that perfects it. It's why we get out of bed in the morning, among other reasons. What's the enemy? Sin, that's for sure. Sin, in a word, makes you sad. It shows how we've missed the mark. What each of us needs is greater hope to will for ourselves a future good which is difficult or arduous to attain, but possible with the help of God. As Jesus Christ shows us, friendship is the greatest good, an exchange between man and God. But in making friends with God, we also become the friends of the friends of God. Those human friendships are not always easy and are sometimes difficult given the complexity of human life and the human character. Cicero shows us in very concrete terms the great good of human friendship. In a word, friendship is what makes life worth living. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this lecture on the Thomistic Institute podcast. The generosity of people like you makes this podcast possible. If you enjoy these talks, please consider showing your support at www.thomisticinstitute.org/donate. Your donation of even a dollar helps us reach more college students and many others with the powerful truths of the faith, and it ensures that we can keep publishing top-notch lectures on this podcast. Thanks a lot.